Number two, Madam Clerk.
From the District Attorney's Office and the Department of Health and Human Services, follow-up reports on the proposed legislation, Senate Bill 173, regarding disclosure of electronic juvenile court records to law enforcement agencies. This is informational unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Could we have, can we, Mr. Moe come up at the same time?
Sure.
Staff or DeRosa, do you want to briefly outline this first, or our speakers can do that certainly, or what would be your pleasure? Okay, would you both please introduce yourself, and you have the floor. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. John Chisholm, Milwaukee County District Attorney.
Eric Moe, Administrator for Delinquency Court Services Division.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. I hope that the committee was provided with an October 26 memo from Deputy District Attorney Pat Kenny. I asked him to summarize the issue in as concise a form as possible with respect to Senate Bill 173. He did so, and from a historical perspective, what I would simply inform the committee is that our position has been that there was a previous bill that was that really addressed almost ideally what we sought, that we being the public safety officials in Milwaukee County, including the law enforcement, the courts, the district attorney's office, child welfare agencies, social services, a means to facilitate communication related to juvenile records in a timely fashion, but also maintain the confidentiality and protections that rightly should be afforded juvenile records. That was 2007 Assembly Bill 676 that was vetoed entirely by Governor Doyle unexpectedly, quite frankly. So what is and what came out of that veto was some limited extension of access to information related to juvenile records that allowed under Assembly Bill after it was vetoed in its entirety. In 2009, Wisconsin Act 338 was enacted, and that permitted the juvenile court to transfer its electronic records to the Department of Children and Families, which would then use its statewide automated child welfare system to transfer information and those records to counties for purposes of providing child welfare services. As outlined by Deputy DA Kenny's memo, even though that was authorized, it's been 2 years and no action's been taken by the Director of State Courts. And so my concern, quite frankly, now, what prompts a review of access to juvenile records, quite frankly, are many incidents that occurred during the summer this year related to some relatively high-profile incidents of criminal conduct by some young men that were under supervision at the time, and that prompted a re-review of the access to juvenile records and a proposal for increasing access to the law enforcement agencies. What we're concerned about is that when they rewrote the bill, they just didn't go back to Assembly Bill 676, which is what I think they should have done. That was a comprehensive bill. I think it addressed all the major issues that were needed. Instead, they went back and they only granted access to law enforcement, but they, again, put it in the hands of the Director of State Courts to implement the standards that would allow law enforcement to have access to it. From a practical standpoint, I don't think it does what we want it to do. And I'm always cautious in saying this because I think what Eric Moe will attest to is that there are a lot of ways to communicate information in a legally appropriate and confidential way right now. What we've always talked about is making it more accessible on a timely basis. My concern with the proposed legislation right now is that it increases law enforcement access to those records. It still excludes key entities like the DA's office and municipal courts. We've had a tremendous expansion of referrals for municipal citations to the municipal courts related to juvenile offenders. It still restricts access to child protection agencies. And so my basic premise on this is that it's a flawed bill. It's received some sponsorship and support, but certainly the City of Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Police Department, are in the process of requesting amendments to that bill that would really bring it back to the Assembly Bill 676 status. And that's where we're hopeful we're going to be in the future if we go forward with some modifications of juvenile access. I think that this can be accomplished. I think it can be accomplished in a reasonable fashion that still protects confidentiality and limits access to those juvenile records for all the appropriate reasons.
Mr. Moe, you want to pick up on that from your perspective?
Sure. I guess I'll approach this. My report wasn't quite as concise as the DA's office, but more as a programmatic perspective. Is that one thing that I think it's important for the committee to know is that information is shared with law enforcement. And the department recognizes that there was a series of articles that ran. One of the things that didn't come out was the fact of data that shows how often that the county probation department does talk with law enforcement. So there are means in which probation departments and law enforcement do talk. I think one of the concerns that the department has is that by choosing this method and sharing information, in some respects, down the line, I think it removes what we do want, and that's purposeful and meaningful sharing of information. And I have some concerns that by just the way this bill is crafted now, only allowing it access to the law enforcement agencies, is that it's going to somewhat put up a barrier that is now going to somehow remove the need for us to share information. And there's a number of examples that I think where through local ordinances and other information sharing, we've seen that happen. And so I think it's important for the committee to know that there are two ways currently that information is shared on a confidential basis. One of the things that the department suggests, should this body want to communicate something to the representatives, is a modification of the existing law that would allow county probation departments to share information on a routine basis. We do share information on a case-by-case basis now, but one of the ways to become more efficient and reliable is to share data, if you will, or information en masse, if you will, or wholesale, if you want to use that term. There are some differing opinions as to whether or not you can legally do that, and I respect the DA's office. Pat Kenny, I go back and forth. He's an attorney. I'm not, but even our corporation counsel, they just tend to vary in this area, and it has to do perhaps with some ambiguity that's in the current code. So be that as it may, the department has the opinion that there probably is a better crafted legislation that would allow information to be shared. In our report in page 3, you'll note that there is some basic information. This kind of summarizes what is shared on a routine basis with law enforcement, basically via picking up the phone and calling. We've done that for years, but through a new bill perhaps and some modifications to the Juvenile Justice Code, I'm sure at a local level we could probably figure out a way to share that more efficiently. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you. Brokowski, go first this time.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, what bothers me is that And it always happens to government, regardless if it's county or city or state, federal. 99.75% of the time, the way it's supposed to work, it works. and you know, there's no kudos for doing your job. All right, but I know what sells newspapers and what gets the juices flowing with the media is those times where things fall through the crack, and this was one of those times. And so the situation, and it was a gruesome, situation. It dealt with the lady that was expecting, right? Okay, and we won't have to get into But I mean, so that was the genesis of this whole thing, right? And how did that fall through the cracks? I don't know it specifically and stuff, but it wasn't as lopsided as it was made out to be. That, you know, somebody just said, "Oh, the heck with these young people. You know, we're just going to let them run rampant and stuff." I mean, there was. I don't know what you can divulge and stuff, but we all remember the case, and obviously this is the process and that kind of stuff. But what happened?
Sure, and you're correct. I am limited because it's a pending case, and what I can discuss about the facts of that case. It is an outlier case, and yet, and I think Eric can discuss some of the information that was shared and the status of those individuals. But your original comment is right on point, and that is that, you know, since that incident, and because it focused such a lens on the juvenile justice system, we went to some lengths. Recently, we held a meeting with the Criminal Justice Council, an open community meeting where Judge Murray and Eric spoke and presented just the facts, the facts as they relate to young people under supervision by the state of Wisconsin from Milwaukee County. Most people, I think, would be shocked, given the incidents of this summer where it's portrayed, as you say, in the media, as a widespread problem. I actually brought the numbers along today to give some context to that. And again, as these were numbers that Eric was able to produce in response to these perceptions and concerns. We currently have a total of, if I were to ask what your guess is, I'm assuming you would think hundreds of young people are under supervision by the state from Milwaukee County right now for violent offenses. We currently have a total of 73 young people under
Milwaukee
supervision
County.
From Milwaukee County. That's correct. And so it's a this would never go to excuse the fact that individuals under supervision committed another terrible act, but it contextualizes it, is what I can say, is that, fear drives perception, and when that, as you indicate, tends to sell newspapers, that's what gets the lead. But I think it's critical that we know, for example, it also doesn't help when public officials make statements, for example, like the juvenile justice system is broken. That tends to stoke those fires as well. And the reality is our juvenile justice system is not broken. Our juvenile justice system in many ways functions in an extraordinary fashion and has done so to the extent that, you know, I always pair, you cannot hold two inconsistent facts, those inconsistent facts are that the state has just elected to close down Wales. Right, they've just closed a juvenile facility. A lot of that is because of actions that have been taken by Milwaukee County in the last 10 years that have tried to address the need to serve and intervene quickly in juvenile offenders' lives, but do so in a way that didn't place extraordinary burdens on the county for the expense of that intervention and that supervision. So that you've increased local interventions dramatically, and it's actually become a model that we're looking at in the adult system that says we should be doing a smarter job of intervening at the local level and relying less on sending people to the state system because of the extraordinary cost and, quite frankly, the lower levels of success, the high rates of recidivism that are in the state supervision system. That's not pointing fingers. It's just saying that we have to work much more collaboratively to do that. But I say this because I think that one takeaway from the focus of this summer is that we can do a better job of sharing that information for the high-risk offenders. That's one thing that I think the juvenile system would benefit from the adult system is we tend to do a very good job in the adult system of identifying high-risk offenders, people that are engaged in violent crimes, and then appropriately investigating, prosecuting, convicting, sentencing, and incapacitating those individuals. You could make the argument that we should do with, if this is our number right here, 73, maybe we should be investing even more resources into making sure that we keep them under very close surveillance while they're in the community. And that would be my takeaway from that. This communication process, I think, would be facilitated by a more expansive juvenile access bill, but it could be done in a way that is again accountable. There's currently a system in place at the state called NCIC, which is the local law enforcement access to national records related to criminal offenses. You have to be trained, you have to be certified, and inappropriate use of that system comes with substantial penalties. And that's one of the things that I would like to see incorporated into increasing juvenile access. There's really only a limited number of people in law enforcement that need that access. They need to be trained. It has to be meaningful. If a police officer on the street encounters somebody, he or she is not going to be able to meaningfully access juvenile information and know what it means. The rule is that you don't, as Supervisor Broderick knows very well, when you're out in the street, you don't have your face in a computer screen. You're situationally aware all the time. Even if they had access to juvenile CCAP and they see that the guy's wanted for a capias, your average cop is not going to know what that means. They're not going to be able to interpret that. What they need is some meaningful ability to say, look, I've encountered this juvenile. They can call dispatch. The dispatch would be able to tell them what the status of that juvenile is in a quick, meaningful way so that they could say, okay, this young person is coming with me today. We're going to bring him out to Children's Court for detention, or I'm going to cite and release this person, or I'm going to order them in for a later date. That's the kind of communication that I think we could do a much better job of, and that's my approach to this. With respect to the individuals in that incident, do you want to just state what their status was at that time?
Let me try to. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to share this because you haven't heard a lot about this for a variety of reasons, and sometimes the paper, I guess, doesn't choose to print certain things. But let me say, I need to be careful, so if I pause for a second, regarding confidentiality. But let me say this, that on any given day, there's approximately 10 to 11% of our youth are not supervised by the county, but they're supervised by the state. I'm going to reflect on some things that have been reported in the paper to share information with you, is that there is an investigation into that incident. We do not have an open investigation into that incident. That's not to say we're not looking at the incident to see how we can perhaps work more collaboratively and share information both with the state and with law enforcement. I think that's reflected in this report. But I think that case also should be a lesson learned, that in one of the reports regarding that incident, there was reference that the state had made some arrangements to share information through a statewide information reporting that is available to law enforcement. I say that because I want to emphasize that just putting information out there isn't enough. There needs to be collaboration. We can list as many people as we want, but unless agencies are talking and identifying the right individuals, in our case youth or adults, that are high risk, there's too many. I mean, where do you start? So that's when I say it needs to be meaningful and purposeful sharing of information so that we're not wasting our energies on the wrong people. And I think, quite honestly, that's a very good example of something we should learn from, which is why I think the current bill, needs either some modification, needs to refocus itself to make sure that agencies are sharing information in sort of a multi-systems interagency collaboration.
Thank you. A question, actually. That specific case aside, what I'm not really clear yet on, and I was hoping you'd give me like a hypothetical situation, I'm not sure the actual practical differences between the Assembly Bill 173 versus what you want to be shared, whether it's the original 676 or different. So if a police officer kind of in a hypothetical situation stops a juvenile, what information do you think under Assembly Bill 173 might he be given access to versus what you think it should be? Do you understand that? And I know you started to touch on that, but on a real practical basis, I'm not clear. And is it only police officers we're talking about, or is it also ADAs or dispatch staff or whomever?
That's a great question. It hones in on my concerns as well, and the answer is I don't know. And because as it's currently written, it it invests the authority to structure what is given, and it is only to law enforcement. It would only be the police officers. It invests that authority in the director of state courts. And the reason I mention the delay in implementation of the law, even from 2 years ago, is that is my concern that if it's left in the hands of the director of state court in its current form, and this isn't again, I'm not pointing fingers at the director of state court, what will be released will tend to be the bare minimum that would be available for law enforcement, and I don't know what form it would actually be in, whether it would actually be meaningful for law enforcement or not. And that's why I go back to the original draft that really had bipartisan support. It was a considerable surprise to everybody in the system when it was vetoed at the last minute, because it had been supported by almost everybody except a small section of the Wisconsin Bar, the juvenile criminal section, at the last minute expressed concerns about it, and then the governor vetoed it pretty much at the last minute. And so that form of the bill was again much more expansive. It granted access to DAs, which we currently don't have. We have it by local court order is how we have it right now. It does not grant it to, for example, child placement workers. For example, if you arrest somebody and the kid's at risk and you want to place them with a family member or something like that, it would be nice for those individuals to know that you're not going to place them with somebody that has an outstanding order with the court for a child abuse case or a sexual assault of a child or a restraining order of some kind. So it doesn't grant them information. It does not grant it to the municipal court judges as well, which, again, is you're trying to sort the wheat from the chaff. Which kid should I bring in? Which one should I not bring in? It would be nice for the municipal courts to have access to what the record is as well, so that they know that they're making appropriate decisions. We've seen a tremendous increase in that type of approach in the last couple of years. Eric can tell you that the actual referrals of juveniles to children's court have actually gone down dramatically, and recent studies by the Policy Institute also confirmed that we have substantially lower numbers of juveniles being referred out to children's court, and it's consistent with lower numbers of adults and being detained in our correctional system. So so what we're really talking about is having meaningful information that could be shared quickly. In my context, what I think the most useful thing would be a police officer on the street have been able to contact dispatch, being informed of what the status of that youthful offender is. Do they have a pending court case? Do they have a warrant out for them or a capias? Do they have restrictions? Are they under supervision? Those are really the three key points that I think a police officer is going to want to know on the street. It's not expansive. They don't need to know much more than that as it currently exists. Even when they encounter adults, they really want about three pieces of information from dispatch. Are they in warrant? Do we have a pending investigation against the person? And do they have any outstanding prohibitions or conditions on them? And so that's what we're really talking about.
So is this then, is 173 more of a, and I'm completely paraphrasing more of a knee-jerk reaction to what happened that actually doesn't give enough information in a form that's understandable to frontline officers? Is that kind of...
That's how I would summarize it. And, okay. And it's a little baffling because it is being sponsored by Senator Darling, and she was the sponsor of the bill that we thought was the perfect 676. She was the original sponsor of that. And when Chief Deputy Kennedy, or when Deputy DA Kenny approached her staff and basically reminded them of that, is, hey, why are you putting forth this sort of anemic version of what we want when it doesn't do what we want it to do? When you actually sponsored the original bill a couple of years ago, why don't you just go back to that bill? Everyone and pretty much across the board agrees that was the better bill, and the answer was, well, we've already got our sponsors lined up and we want to move this through fairly quickly. And so I think that's the concern we have right now. I think if everyone just took a little bit of a deeper breath, went back to that original version and fine-tuned that, that would be the best way to do it. Again, I've got even another memo from Pat Kenny that really outlines the talking points for Assembly Bill 676 and addresses all the reasons why that original bill was the best one. That was from September of 2011.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anybody else? Just informational. So the obvious question, I guess, is status. Both the advocates in your areas, we need to have that voice from Milwaukee County, obviously. So you both, this information has been shared with representatives. You both were up in Madison when the bill, or what is the status? I guess that's the question. Maybe staff can help us out as to where we are on this legislation, the 173.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not certain what the exact status of the bill is at this point in time.
So, but we just heard that we're going to be in this session, so we don't think any fast track is going as far as this bill is concerned.
Well,
it's not going to be in this session.
Keeping in mind, for purposes of this session, the floor period that ends. And this week, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping in mind, though, the session will not end until approximately April of next year.
Okay.
I can find the exact.
You've been up testifying, correct?
I sent Pat Kenny there at the last date, and we've been tracking it closely. The city is also involved in this process. So last week we met with Marshall Murray and with Eric and with my office, with the City of Milwaukee Police Department and the mayor's office, and they've been tracking it as well with the notion that they joined in the sponsorship of it, because I think a lot of this was actually driven by, I think they were trying to respond to some of the comments that Chief Flynn had made in regards to that incident. And so I think that's why they were pushing it in the form they were. I think the city is now trying to get them to go back to that original version as part of an amendment process. So that's where we're at right now.
Mr. Mogues, that's the same situation with your office?
That's accurate.
Okay. Thank you so much. So we'll keep track with staff on this and appreciate your work on this. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're on to number three.
This is the update from the legislative matters. This is informational unless otherwise directed.
Thank you.
Hi, Joe. I'd like to report several supervisors who ranked for Madison on October 19th and on the county ambassador program day. Emphasis was given in Madison by supervisors to talk about spending legislation in the council, but also spent a considerable amount of time talking about the child support enforcement funding issue relative to that item still being practically addressed by the Senate Finance Committee.
There would be nothing else to tell you. Okay. Okay, anything else? Thank you for keeping with your requirements and coming to committee meetings. We appreciate it. And we're adjourned. Thank you.